Kansas City has always been a city of contrast. Bright lights, historic jazz clubs, family neighborhoods, busy highways, people building ordinary lives. But beneath every city, there are places most people never see. Forgotten streets, abandoned buildings, neighborhoods where people disappear and few people ask questions. And sometimes, monsters learn exactly where those places are. They learn who society ignores, who police struggle to find, who families search for in silence. And once they learn that, the hunting begins. For years, women vanished in Kansas City. Some were sex workers. Some battled addiction. Many lived in the margins. Their disappearances rarely made headlines. Their faces rarely appeared on television. And because of that, a predator believed he could kill without consequences. His name was Terry Blair, a serial killer who stalked Kansas City's most vulnerable women. A man who spent years moving through the shadows. A man who thought nobody would ever connect the bodies. A man who believed his victims didn't matter, but they did matter. And tonight, we're telling their story. Because behind every victim was a daughter. A sister, a mother, a friend, and behind every monster, there is a trail of darkness waiting to be uncovered. This is Among Monsters. Welcome back to Among Monsters. I'm Maya Vale. Tonight we travel to Kansas City, Missouri, a city that became the hunting ground for one of America's lesser-known serial killers. Unlike Ted Bundy, unlike Jeffrey Dahmer, unlike John Wayne Gacy, Terry Blair never became a household name. But that doesn't make his crimes any less horrifying. In fact, the relative obscurity of his case raises difficult questions. Questions about who gets media attention. Questions about whose lives society values. Questions about how serial killers can continue operating when their victims come from vulnerable communities. This is the story of Terry Blair and the women whose lives he stole. Terry Blair entered the world on September 16, 1961. He was born into chaos. Violence was not something he discovered later. Violence surrounded him from the beginning. His family history was dark, deeply dark. His father was known for brutality. Physical abuse was common. Fear was constant. Home should be the safest place in a child's life. For Terry Blair, home became a place of trauma. Psychologists often warn that childhood trauma alone does not create killers. Most abused children never become violent criminals. Most grow into compassionate adults despite unimaginable hardships. But trauma can become part of a dangerous foundation. And for Terry Blair, that foundation was already being built. As he grew older, signs of instability appeared. Anger simmered beneath the surface. Relationships became difficult. Authority became a problem. Violence increasingly became a way of solving conflicts. People who knew him later would describe a man capable of sudden rage. A man who could shift from calm to threatening in moments. A man carrying something dark beneath the surface. Something waiting. Something growing. Something dangerous. To understand Terry Blair's crimes, we must first understand his victims, because their stories matter. Far too often, serial killer cases become focused entirely on the murderer. The victims become footnotes, names listed briefly before attention shifts back to the monster. Tonight, we're doing things differently. The women Terry Blair targeted were human beings. Many struggled with addiction. Some worked the streets. Some lived unstable lives, but those facts do not define them. They were daughters, friends, family members, people with hopes, people with memories, people who laughed, people who dreamed, people who deserved safety. Unfortunately, predators often seek victims they believe nobody will notice. Women living on society's margins become targets because killers assume police investigations will be slower. Media attention will be limited. Public concern will be weaker. Terry Blair understood this, and he exploited it over and over again. The streets of Kansas City became his hunting ground. He knew where vulnerable women gathered. He knew which neighborhoods police struggled to monitor. He knew how to blend into the environment And most importantly, he knew how to gain trust. Because serial killers rarely look like monsters. They look ordinary. They smile. They talk. They offer rides. They seem harmless until they aren't. In the early 2000s, Kansas City began finding bodies, women, strangled, discarded, left behind like garbage. Each discovery brought heartbreak. Families searched for answers. Friends mourned. Investigators worked desperately to identify patterns. But patterns can be difficult to see when victims come from transient populations. Some women disappeared for days before anyone realized something was wrong. Others had histories that complicated investigations. And during those delays, the killer continued hunting. Body after body appeared. The fear grew. Yet many residents didn't fully understand what was happening. Serial murder often creates images of national headlines, breaking news, television specials, constant coverage. That wasn't happening here. Many of these deaths received limited attention. And while public awareness remained low, a predator remained free. Terry Blair continued moving through Kansas City, continued finding victims, continued believing he was untouchable. The terrifying reality of serial killers is not merely their violence. It's their confidence, their belief that they can continue, their belief that nobody will stop them. And with every successful murder, that confidence grows. By the time investigators began recognizing the full scope of what was happening, several women were already dead, and more would follow. Serial killers often develop routines, patterns, methods, preferred victim types, preferred locations, preferred ways of killing. Terry Blair was no different. His victims were overwhelmingly vulnerable women, women he believed could disappear without immediate alarm, women whose lives society often overlooked. He used manipulation, conversation, false trust, then violence. The murders were personal, close, intimate, not the intimacy of affection, the intimacy of control. Strangulation required proximity. The killer must remain with the victim, must watch, must exert physical dominance. It's one of the most personal forms of murder imaginable, and Terry Blair repeatedly chose it. That fact alone tells investigators something important. This wasn't simply about removing witnesses. It wasn't simply about robbery. It wasn't simply about opportunity. It was about power, control, domination, the ability to decide who lived and who died. Those motivations appear again and again throughout serial killer history. And Terry Blair fit that pattern. A man seeking power through violence. A man finding satisfaction and control. A man who viewed human beings as objects, as disposable, as targets. And that mindset would leave a trail of devastation across Kansas City. For families of missing persons, the waiting is torture. Every phone call becomes a possibility. Every knock on the door sends a wave of anxiety through the body. Every day without answers feels like a year. For the families of Terry Blair's victims, the nightmare became reality. Some of the women disappeared suddenly. Others had lifestyles that made disappearances harder to recognize immediately. A missed appointment, a missed phone call, a few days without contact. At first, it didn't always trigger immediate alarm. But eventually, the silence became impossible to ignore. Mothers searched. Sisters searched. Friends searched. Questions spread through neighborhoods. Have you seen her? Has anyone heard from her? Does anyone know where she went? The answer never came. Instead, bodies begin appearing. One woman. Then another. Then another. The discoveries were horrifying. Each victim represented an entire world destroyed, a life erased, a family shattered. And while investigators worked case after case, many people still didn't realize a serial killer was operating among them. Sometimes the monster is invisible, not because he's hiding particularly well, but because society isn't paying attention. Terry Blair understood that reality. He understood that vulnerable women often received less media attention, less public outrage, less urgency, and he used that knowledge as a weapon. Kansas City detectives began noticing similarities. Victims shared common characteristics, locations overlapped. Methods appeared connected. Patterns slowly emerged. Investigators knew something terrible might be happening. Serial murder investigations rarely begin with certainty. They begin with suspicions, a feeling, a possibility, a pattern that refuses to go away. Every detective hopes they're wrong, because if they're right, it means multiple people are already dead. As additional victims were discovered, the possibility became increasingly difficult to ignore. The killer appeared organized, deliberate, calculated. He wasn't acting randomly. He wasn't losing control. He was selecting victims, finding opportunities, executing a plan, and then disappearing back into everyday life. That ability to return to normalcy after murder is one of the most disturbing traits found in serial killers. Imagine ending a human life, then going grocery shopping, watching TV, talking with neighbors, acting like nothing happened. Most people cannot comprehend it. Yet serial killers do it repeatedly, and Terry Blair was no exception. While families grieved, while detectives searched, he continued living his life as nothing had happened, as if the women he murdered never existed. Every major investigation was a turning point, a moment when scattered pieces finally began fitting together. For Kansas City detectives, that moment arrived through relentless police work. Tips emerged, witnesses talked, connections formed, names surfaced. Eventually, one name appeared repeatedly, Terry Blair. Investigators started digging deeper. The more they learned, the more concerning the picture became. He had a violent history. He had connections to areas where victims disappeared. He had relationships with women similar to those being targeted. And perhaps most importantly, he fit the profile investigators were developing. Detectives began focusing significant attention on him. But suspicion alone isn't enough. Investigators needed evidence. Hard evidence. Evidence capable of surviving court. Evidence capable of proving murder. Evidence capable of ending the nightmare. Meanwhile, Terry Blair remained free. And every day he remained free created another terrifying possibility. What if there were more victims? What if the killing hadn't stopped? What if another woman disappeared tomorrow? Those questions drove investigators forward because they understood what was at stake. Lives. Eventually, detectives brought Terry Blair in for questioning. What followed would shock even experienced investigators. Many killers deny everything. They minimize. They deflect. They blame others. They construct elaborate lies. But Terry Blair chose a different path. He began talking, and once he started, the admissions came, one after another. The man investigators suspected of murder began confessing. Not one murder, multiple murders. The details were chilling. Matter of fact, detached. As though he were discussing something ordinary. Investigators listened as the scope of the horror became clear. The women weren't random. The killings weren't accidents. The murders were deliberate, intentional, predatory, and perhaps most disturbing. He seemed remarkably comfortable discussing them. That emotional detachment often appears in serial killers. The victims become objects, statistics, memories stripped of humanity. A person capable of empathy struggles to discuss violence. A serial killer often discusses it differently, without remorse, without visible grief, without understanding the devastation left behind. As Terry Blair continued speaking, detectives realized they were hearing the voice of a predator who had spent years believing he would never be caught, years believing he was smarter than everybody else, years believing his victims would remain forgotten. Now, the walls were finally closing in. The confessions stunned Kansas City. Terry Blair admitted responsibility for multiple murders. The exact number became the subject of discussion and investigation. Authorities linked him to a series of killings involving women throughout the city, but some investigators believed the true number might be higher. That's another haunting reality of serial murder. Sometimes we never know the full count. Some victims are never found. Some disappearances remain unsolved. Some secrets die with the killer. Investigators work tirelessly to verify everything Blair said. Each confession required evidence, collaboration, verification, facts. And as they examined the information, the case against him strengthened. Families finally received answers, painful answers, devastating answers, but answers nonetheless. For years, they had lived with uncertainty. Now they faced a terrible truth. Their loved ones were gone. Murdered by a serial killer, the grief was overwhelming. Yet for some families, knowing the truth brought a measure of closure, not peace. Closure and peace are different things. Closure means understanding what happened. Peace is something else entirely. And peace often remains elusive after tragedy. The public finally began learning who Terry Blair really was. Not the face he showed neighbors. Not the version he presented in everyday life. The real Terry Blair, a predator, a serial killer, a man who had spent years exploiting vulnerable women. News spread rapidly. Kansas City residents reacted with shock, fear, anger. Many struggled to understand how someone could commit such horrific crimes for so long. Others questioned whether the victims would have received more attention had they came from different circumstances. Those questions remain relevant today because serial killers frequently target society's most vulnerable people, runaways, sex workers, people struggling with addiction, people experiencing homelessness, individuals whose disappearances may initially draw less attention. That reality is uncomfortable, but it is important because every victim matters, every life matters. And predators often exploit the exact places where society's attention is weakest. Terry Blair did exactly that. He identified vulnerability, then weaponized it. Again and again and again. When the case reached court, the evidence was overwhelming. Confessions, investigative findings, victim connections. The prosecution built a powerful case. Families filled courtrooms, seeking justice, seeking accountability, seeking answers. No verdict could ever bring back the women who had been murdered. No sentence could restore lost birthdays, lost holidays, lost conversations, lost futures. But the justice system still had a responsibility to recognize the victims, to acknowledge the crimes, to hold the killer accountable. As proceedings unfolded, the horrifying scope of Terry Blair's actions became undeniable. The courtroom heard details of violence, manipulation, predation, murder. And with every revelation, the weight of the tragedy grew heavier. For families, for investigators, for the city itself. Kansas City had spent years unknowingly living alongside a serial killer. Now everyone knew his name. Now everyone knew what he had done. Now everyone knew the women he had tried to erase would not be forgotten. Serial murder leaves scars, not just on families, not just on survivors, on entire communities. Neighborhoods remember. Cities remember, investigators remember. The women who Terry Blair murdered left behind people who love them, people who still think about them today, people who wonder what their lives might have become. Children who grew up without mothers, parents who buried daughters, friends forced to carry grief for decades. Those losses don't disappear when a conviction arrives. They remain. But something else remains too, memory. The victims continue to matter. Their stories continue to matter. Their lives continue to matter. And every time we tell these stories, we push back against the darkness. Because serial killers seek control. They seek power. They seek the ability to erase. But remembrance is resistance. Remembering the victims refuses that eraser. Remembering their names refuses that eraser. Remembering their humanity refuses that eraser. And that matters, more than many people realize. One question follows nearly every serial murder case. Why? Why kill? Why again and again? Why destroy lives without remorse? It's a question investigators have wrestled with for generations. And unfortunately, it is a question that rarely has a satisfying answer. Human beings want reasons. We want logic. We want something we can point to and say, there, that's why it happened. But monsters rarely work that way. The truth is often messier, darker, more uncomfortable. When experts examine serial killers, they frequently find a combination of factors: childhood trauma, violence, personality disorders, a need for control, a lack of empathy, a willingness to view other people as objects, not human beings, not individuals with hopes and dreams, objects, things, targets. Terry Blair appeared to fit many of those patterns. His early life contained instability and violence. His adult life contained aggression. His crimes reflected domination and control. But even those factors cannot fully explain murder. Millions of people experience hardships. Millions endure trauma. Millions struggle. And yet they never harm another person. Which means something else must happen. A choice, a decision, a line crossed. At some point, Terry Blair chose violence. At some point, he decided another human life meant less than his own desires. At some point, empathy disappeared. And once that happened, the killings began. The terrifying thing about predators like Terry Blair is that they don't always look dangerous. They don't always walk around wearing warning signs. They blend in. They smile. They work jobs. They have conversations. They stand in line at grocery stores. They live among ordinary people. That reality is one of the reasons serial killers continue to fascinate and terrify us, because they force us to confront a difficult truth. Evil doesn't always announce itself. Sometimes it hides behind an ordinary face. If there is one lesson that emerges from this case, it is this. Every victim matters. Every single one. Too often, the women targeted by Terry Blair were described only by their struggles, addiction, sex work, poverty, instability. But those descriptions tell only a fraction of the story. Before any struggle, there was a person, a child, a daughter, someone who laughed, someone who dreamed, someone who had favorite songs, favorite foods, favorite memories, someone who was loved. One of the greatest tragedies in serial murder cases is how quickly victims can become statistics. A number, a count, a list. But they were never numbers. They were human beings. And human beings deserve dignity, even after death, especially after death. Many advocates argue that cases involving vulnerable victims often receive less attention than others, less media coverage, less public pressure, less urgency. The Terry Blair investigation became part of a larger conversation, because if vulnerable women can disappear repeatedly before the public notices, then something has gone terribly wrong. The value of a life should never depend on social statuses. It should never depend on income. It should never depend on where someone lives or what struggles they face. Every victim deserves attention. Every victim deserves justice. Every victim deserves to be remembered. Cases like this are often remembered for the killer. But there is another side to the story: the investigators, the detectives who refuse to quit, the officers who follow leads long after others have moved on. The people who spend years staring into darkness searching for answers. The public rarely sees what that work looks like. The sleepless nights, the frustration, the dead ends, the pressure, the emotional weight. Imagine sitting across from a serial killer. Imagine hearing confessions. Imagine looking at a crime scene photograph. Imagine calling families with devastating news. That reality becomes part of an investigator's life, and yet they continue. Because somebody has to. Because somebody has to speak for the victims. Somebody has to pursue the truth. Somebody has to stop the monster. In Kansas City, investigators ultimately succeeded. Not because the case was easy. Not because the answers were obvious. But because they kept pushing forward, piece by piece, clue by clue, victim by victim, until the truth finally emerged. Years have passed since Terry Blair's arrest. Kansas City continues to grow. New buildings rise. New families move in. New memories are created. Life moves forward. But places remember. Cities remember. Certain streets remember. Somewhere in Kansas City tonight, cars are passing locations connected to this story. People are walking sidewalks without realizing what happened there years ago. Businesses are open. Music is playing. Life continues. And perhaps that's how it should be. Because monsters should never own a city. They should never define a community. The people who live there deserve better. The victims deserve better. The city deserves better. Terry Blair wanted power, control, fear, like many serial killers. He wanted dominance over the lives of others. But in the end, his control was temporary. His violence ended. His freedom disappeared. And the people he tried to erase continued to be remembered. That is a powerful thing, because memory survives long after monsters fall. The story of Terry Blair is not just a story about a serial killer. It's a story about vulnerability. It's a story about attention. It's a story about who society sees and who society sometimes overlooks. For years, Terry Blair believed he had discovered the perfect hunting ground. Women struggling with addiction. Women living on the margins. Women he assumed nobody would fight for. He was wrong. Investigators fought. Families fought. Communities fought. And eventually, the truth emerged. Cases like this remind us that evil often seeks weakness. It searches for isolation. It searches for people who seem forgotten, which is why compassion matters. Community matters. Awareness matters. Because every person deserves to know someone who cares whether they come home. Every person deserves to know their disappearance would matter. Every person deserves to know they would be searched for, remembered, loved. Terry Blair took lives, but he did not erase them. Their stories remain. And tonight, by remembering them, we honor them. Thank you for listening to Among Monsters. If you found this episode meaningful, please follow the show and leave a review wherever you listen to the podcast. Those ratings and reviews help more listeners discover the stories behind some of history's most disturbing crimes. And more importantly, they help ensure the victims are never forgotten. You can follow Among Monsters for more deep dive investigations into serial killers, unsolved mysteries, disappearances, cults, and the darkest corners of true crime. Until next time, lock your doors, trust your instincts, take care of each other, because sometimes the most terrifying monsters aren't hiding under the bed, they aren't lurking in abandoned buildings, and they aren't waiting in the woods. Sometimes they live among us. Good night, and remember, the darkness only wins when we stop looking for the truth.